All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are going to be talking about a creepy, weird little indie called She Dies Tomorrow from writer-director Amy Simetz. And joining me is Michael Frank, first time on the show, and we had a great conversation about this movie and about all things impending doom and dread, and believe it or not, it's really fun though. So we are going to get into that conversation here in a second, but before we get on to all of that, I do want to remind you to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. And of course, if you're enjoying the show, you can always rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, and follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all these movies and so much more, and maybe a little bit of existential dread creeps into those conversations as well. We'll see what happens. But for now, though, let's start talking about She Dies Tomorrow. All right, so joining me today, we've got writer and film critic Michael Frank. Michael, how's it going?
It's fantastic. Thanks so much for having me.
So we're going to be talking about this movie, She Dies Tomorrow, and we'll get into that in a minute. But the first thing I wanted to ask you, and then also I'm going to want to, you know, get you to tell my listeners a little about yourself and all that. But first things first, though, I know you seem to like really dig this movie. I remember seeing you post about it a few times. I had replied saying how, yeah, I'm thinking about watching this. You know, what made you, I guess before we get into what made you connect with it, we'll get to that later. I just want to know, are you still thinking about it constantly? Because I know you said you were thinking about it quite a lot after you saw it.
I'm thinking about it constantly. I would say that part of that was how I watched it. I watched She Dies Tomorrow. I started at about 11 p.m. On a Wednesday night, just by myself in my room, turned off all the lights, got some ice cream.
This is like the 4DX kind of existentialism.
Yeah. And to be honest, I actually had to pause it halfway through at a really specific scene because I was feeling like really, really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think that, especially where I live, when it gets to a certain time out here, in I live in Brooklyn, I just can get like really quiet on my specific street.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not too many lights or anything, and so it was just like very dark and quiet.
Yeah.
And kind of like the dread was starting to fill me up. I would say I don't think about it as much as I did last week. It's slowly starting to dissipate from my body. But definitely, it hit me, and I still have flashes of thinking about it.
Sure.
I've told a lot of people to watch it, mm-hmm. Which I'm not sure if that's a good or bad thing. But
anytime you're recommending movies, it's a good thing, I think.
Exactly. And so anytime they watch it and bring it back up, it kind of fills me back up with that same dread.
Nice. Well, why don't we introduce you to our listeners here? Why don't you tell people a little about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, definitely. I do a bit of writing and critiquing, I would say, of film and television. I actually only kind of started writing and doing this whole shebang about a year ago. Mm-hmm. I studied journalism actually in college in California and minored in film. And so had a little bit of background that way. But now I freelance write for a bunch of different sites, and mostly love doing interviews. I would say that is become kind of what I do the most of. And done a few of them recently for Roger Ebert and Awards Watch and Film Inquiry and those types of places.
That's awesome. Yeah, I see your name in a bunch of different places, and so I'm glad to finally meet you and get to have you on the show. So this movie, we were kind of digging into it a little bit in that first question, but this movie is absolutely filled with like a kind of dread that is a little bit unrelenting, and you know, we'll get into it more as we get into this conversation, but that is kind of my thing when it comes to a movie.
Yeah.
I do dig when a movie just kind of It just takes a hold of you, and like it really doesn't let up. And even though there's a lot of like kind of dark humor in this, I mean, it's mm-hmm. just a lot of like heavy stuff going on here.
Well, yeah, and the reason why I love it so much is it's pretty snappy. Mm-hmm. I think it's about like 84, 85 minutes.
Sure.
And so, number one, it doesn't take a long time for you to understand what kind of movie you're watching. Mm. You know, I think within the first 10, 15 minutes, you say, okay, I've been hit by this, like we've said, sense of dread or isolation, you know, and then it just gets right into it, you know, and it kind of starts spreading, per se,
sure.
pretty quickly. And I like that it jumps kind of from character to character, and it's not just solely focused on one person, one idea.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I think it is so unrelenting, like you said. You know, I think if it were just focused on, you know, the main lead just kind of, you know, walking around, kind of her past experiences with her ex, or her just, you know, being in the backyard and looking at boxes, then
right.
I don't think it becomes, you know, as special or as haunting of a film.
Yeah.
Because though it runs with every single person that she interacts with, and then who they interact with, and that's kind of how it's set up. It feels, I think, I don't know, I just think it's much more effective.
Sure. Yeah, I think it becomes a much more individual, personal story if it was just about her, whereas in this case, it just becomes a total exploration of you know, what it means to be scared of death, you know? And but, you know, with that all said, I mean, we kind of got to the basic idea of the movie here. We got that out there. Why don't we start jumping into some puzzle pieces? We'll talk more about the movie along the way. What do you have for your first one?
So my first one, I have one that came out in 2014, the film It Follows.
Mm-hmm.
By David Robert Mitchell. It's a film that I've seen be mentioned along with She Dies Tomorrow quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually rewatched it just because I was curious how they kind of match up. And you know, that film is about younger people. One, it's about a like sexually transmitted monster,
mm-hmm.
Or horror of sorts. But I think that the big similarity is both of these spreaders, you know, or like infections or whatever they are, can be parables for something larger, can mean much more than just thinking you're gonna die tomorrow, thinking that because you had sex with someone that now someone is following you.
Right.
And then the second huge piece is, in both films, it's really the only person that sees that or feels that way. You know, so in It Follows, no one really else can see the monster except for the person that it's following. And then in She Dies Tomorrow, it's really singular, you know.
Sure.
It's something that, okay, I feel this way and it affects just me specifically, and then everyone else kind of is confused by that.
Right. Yeah, I think that's absolutely a great piece to start this out with. I surprisingly did not have it on my list, even though it totally mm-hmm. makes sense. But I think just on that the main level of this, you know, unseeable thing that, you know, follows from one person to the other. But another comparison I think that makes a lot of sense is a really strong use of music in both of these movies. I mean, It Follows is one of the best scores of the last, you know, 10 years. And this movie, She Dies Tomorrow, is a great score. And then also interesting use of music, like the Lacrimosa playing over and over again, yeah. and all that, which really like sets you up for like, oh, this is going to be pretty weird. Like,
Well, I think also both of those are kind of trying to reframe elements of horror, you know, and thriller in non-traditional ways.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes sense a lot. All right, I'm going to go on to my first piece, and I'm going to get this one out of the way first because it's the one movie on my list that not really a good one, but I it reminded me of it in a way. And that's M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening, which,
okay.
again, you know, you've got this kind of unseeable force that for some reason is traveling from person to person, in that case causing them to kill themselves, I believe. I kind of forget that movie already,
yeah.
but yeah, it's that kind of a thing though. And you know, there's a a certain like question of like, you know, what exactly is it that's unfolding here? Like it's kind of hard to put your finger on for the beginning of the movie, but it starts to like kind of slowly get unpacked for you. And it's quite possible to even not fully understand it by the end. It's definitely something that isn't as interested in fully explaining itself as it is, you know, letting you try to piece all that together.
Yeah, I think that makes tons of sense. That's funny. That's a movie I truly have not seen.
Yeah.
At least 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, I saw it in the theater, and that was the last time. I do remember it had a couple of really effective moments. Like, I'll give it that. And I mean, M. Night Shyamalan, he's, you know, for all of his bad films, he's made a lot of great ones too. And, yeah. You know, so I'll give him credit where credit's due. That movie had a few good scenes, just kind of not super well thought out, though, the rest of it.
Yeah, and also and just another kind of interesting similarity, I think that movie has just like a ton of people in it.
Yeah.
Like all I remember is from the movie is just seeing like a lot of familiar faces, which, you know, She Dies Tomorrow, if I think you watch a lot of especially, you know, say like Swanberg movies or kind of a lot of these smaller indie movies, a lot of these people will pop up.
Sure.
From, you know, She Dies Tomorrow. And it was kind of the thing where even, you know, Michelle Rodriguez pops up for,
yeah,
you know, 25 seconds at the end.
Adam Wingard, of all people.
Yeah. You're just like, okay, like, I guess lots of good actors are just going to be in this movie for not necessarily, you know, the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely an interesting cast. And a lot of these people who you just certainly wouldn't expect to see, but hey, there they are. And they're filled with as much dread as the no-name people.
100%.
So what do you got for your next piece?
So my next piece is a film that I personally love. It might not be the most critically acclaimed, but I think it actually like set, you know, a somewhat important precedent for horror and I think, you know, death-filled films. And that is Final Destination.
Nice.
I had to put it on. I think that the feeling that you know you're going to die, that's basically that entire movie.
Sure.
And just trying to, one, grapple with that fact. I think they actually fight that, of course, in Final Destination, where in She Dies Tomorrow, it's much more, you know, resignation.
Sure.
Or acceptance. But there are certainly characters in the Final Destination, you know, first film in 2000, as well as the rest of the films, who just kind of accept that fact and then either commit suicide or lay down in front of a train or whatever it may be, just because they know that death is coming.
Yeah.
And of course, that's a much different, I think, kind of movie, though it still is at least genre adjacent.
Sure. Yeah. I think it would be very fair if you're trying to, you know, explain what this movie is to someone and just say, like, it's an indie Final Destination, you know, it's the A24 neon Final Destination, you know, I think someone would be like, oh, okay, I get what I'm getting into.
Well, yeah, and it's a lot of, like, we're going to build, you know, like, I think Final Destination, like, does, like, a bunch of really small builds, I think, you know, like, throughout it.
Sure.
And She Dies Tomorrow, I feel like every single time, it's kind of like it's in a conversation and then it builds, you know, those bright lights.
Yeah.
And like we've said, the score and the music like swells and you're like, okay, I feel like that something is happening inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
And one, I'm dreading for the people that I'm watching, as you do in, I think, like Final Destination, like even though they might be not dumber movies, you know, but I think that they're not grappling with the same types of things. At least in the same weighty way.
Sure.
As She Dies Tomorrow, it's still effective, you know, in making you feel nervous and anxious.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think that this conversation could not have happened without talking about Final Destination.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Good piece. And I'll go on to my next piece, which is a movie that people just really did not talk about, but I loved last year. It was called To Dust. And it's written and directed by Sean Snyder. It starred Matthew Broderick in a role just kind of out of nowhere coming back. And
good for him.
Geezer Rohrig. And yeah, it's a really great indie like very pitch black dark comedy that like kind of deals with grief, and it's about a Hasidic Jew who seeks out a community college professor to try to help him deal with the loss of his wife and what happens after death and what death means, and because his religion isn't quite giving him the closure and the understanding that he needs. And so in this movie, it's a very different thing, more of a horror thing, but it certainly though is these characters who are having to come to terms with what death means and what death is and acceptance of that. And everybody kind of has their own way in which they all have that I'm going to die tomorrow moment, but then they also have their own little bits and pieces of the way that they're dealing with the idea.
Yeah. I, to be completely honest with you, I've never heard of this movie.
Oh,
I mean, that little synopsis and your speech on that. I mean, it's sold me immediately. So I think I'm probably going to queue it up immediately after this. And I would love to see Matthew Broderick in anything.
Yeah.
To be completely honest, I feel bad for saying that. Sometimes I just forget that he's out there, because I feel like he's just rarely in things that people see.
He just like kind of like disappeared forever. But definitely I can't recommend that film enough. So please do check it out. And I've done my job if you do watch it. So
yeah, definitely.
What's your next piece?
So I am also going to talk about something that deals heavily with grief and death, and that is the HBO series The Leftovers from Damon Lindelof. It's a show that I didn't watch while it was going on, that I actually watched in the last year, and it stars just a ton of fantastic people, from Justin Theroux and Carrie Coon to, you know, Regina King and Margaret Qualley, and just kind of all these people pop in and out. And it's a show. Have you seen it? Or,
you know what? I haven't. That was on my list of when the whole quarantine situation started. I was like, I'm finally going to watch The Leftovers, and it just hasn't happened.
Yeah. So I'm not going to try to give away too much, but basically 2% of the world's population just disappears.
Right.
Which is like just a weird amount of people, you know, like, and it ends up being one person in your family, you know, or a few people in your town, or you know, whatever it may be. And so it's about all these people that are dealing with the loss of family, friends, and normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's on a really specific date, and so every single year this comes around this, you know, specific date of kind of like the disappearances and the vanishing. Everyone thinks, or not everyone, but at least, you know, some characters and, you know, certain people in the town or community feel as though then it's, again, they're going to die on that day. And so people are preparing constantly for death throughout the show, because no one really has any clue when death is coming, you know, sure. or if this is something that is going to happen again, or if it's just a coincidence, or if it's a, you know, random event. And that idea of death and grief just seeping constantly into your life.
Sure. It's like always there, and like,
yeah. And it overwhelms, you know, characters throughout the show. And I think it's an absolutely fantastic, haunting, really weird show that is very confusing and very dark. You know, it's not an easy show to watch, 3 episodes of in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Or else you'll start feeling, I think, really poorly about the state of the world and about about, you know, death in your own life and death around you. But I couldn't help but think about it when watching She Dies Tomorrow, possibly because I watched it recently, but also because it's one of the best pieces of television or film that I've seen that deals with grief and death, and how we're really freaked out by it, you know, and we just don't know how to act, you know, like we don't know how to act. And so we either we jump into something that is either not healthy, not safe, or will lead us down a very poor path.
Sure. And that's like baked into just like being a person. And so it's like it's great that like a movie like this could come along. And, you know, we of course love our big action movies and comedies and all that, but for something like this to come along is awesome too, to be able to like explore these kinds of themes in a very unique and different way.
1000%. I mean, it's, I know you did an episode recently on The Tax Collector.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's funny to look at, for example, like She Dies Tomorrow versus The Tax Collector.
Right.
Just like, it's like, okay, these movies came out, you know, within a couple weeks of each other. And they are really going for different themes and, you know, a different appearance and different effect. So
Tax Collector's got some heavy stuff once you get into the pouring chicken blood on yourself and whatever.
Exactly.
Well, I will go on to my next piece. I'm going to stay squarely in the whole existentialness of that last one there and talk about I Heart Huckabees from David O. Russell, which is, I mean, to me is like, you know, kind of the ultimate when it comes to like dealing with that whole existential, like, you know, what does it all mean kind of question within a comedy, a dark comedy, you know. And there's certainly, like I said, moments of humor in this movie, really dark humor. But also like the thing that kind of like connected the most, aside from just that, you know, those kinds of questions, is the way that, you know, I remember the scene in I Heart Huckabees, you know, how am I not myself? How am I not myself? You know, it just kind of becomes meaningless, that question. And it's like, I'm going to die tomorrow. I'm going to die tomorrow. And it's like, it's just kind of, it's like this repeated thing that becomes like, you know, or do you even like know what you're saying at this point? Like, is it just kind of coming out? Like, what is the purpose of, you know, what do these characters understand what they're saying, or is it just kind of coming out on autopilot in a way, you know? And it's just, it's a fun use of language, I think, in a way where it's like, it just kind of shows how once something gets repeated over and over again, it just starts to almost lose meaning in a very strange way. And it's an interesting phenomenon, I guess.
Can I ask you something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, about that film? Why do you think, I feel like it's gotten kind of lost in the shuffle of the last, you know, I don't know, 15 years. Why do you think it's, I feel like it's sort of been not necessarily forgotten, but it's just like not nearly as necessarily, I feel like, beloved as other, David O. Russell films.
Yeah, I have to assume it has to do with all the Oscar attention that came like right after that with like three in a row, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Silver Linings Playbook, American Hustle, and
The Fighter.
The Fighter, yep. Oh, and also the other one with Jennifer Lawrence, where with the mop. Was that Joy? Is that what
Joy?
It was called? Yeah, that was him too, right?
Yeah. It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a film I particularly loved, but
sure. Yeah, that was definitely the weakest of those four. But yeah, no, I have to assume it's all that Oscar buzz between all four of those movies. And so it's just kind of like, oh, that's what he did before that, kind of. Mm. And, you know, but I don't know. I love that movie. Actually, just a weird little tangent for a second, but my best friend Q and I, we went as Jason Schwartzman and Mark Wahlberg's characters for Halloween that year that it came out.
Was that a pretty popular costume?
Literally not a single person knew what we were, which of course made it all the better, you know.
Exactly. No, that's I love to hear that. Those are always the best costumes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's so ridiculous now that I think about it. All right, what do you got for your next piece?
So I don't know if this is allowed, but I'm going to kind of give a few movies that are all kind of, I think, in the same vein.
Sure.
That all, I think, fill kind of the same hole. And so this is the 1997 Japanese film Perfect Blue, Black Swan, and then Polanski's Repulsion.
Mm-hmm.
And so all three of these movies, though not the exact same, they're all, I think, about like central, like female lead characters who are going through some sort of like mental, like taxing mental experience, I would say. Because I don't necessarily think that like they're, you know, just completely like spiraling or anything like that. But they're about people that really don't know what is real and kind of what's fake, and that feel that someone or something is coming for them. You know, so all three of those films are, they either think a person, they think, you know, a group of people, they think death, whatever it may be, is like coming to get them. And they're really, you know, those films are mostly just like that, those central characters. And it's kind of, you're living inside of their mind to a certain degree. And I think there's no sense of, you know, a spreading of, you know, illnesses, death, of anxiety.
Sure.
But in terms of anxiety captured on screen, I think those are like incredible films that show the anxiety when you start thinking about something so much.
Right.
That it can, it becomes all consuming, and then you struggle to live, you know, and you struggle to move past that, so that you think, okay, maybe death is coming tomorrow, you know, or someone is coming to kill me, or you know, this man that is walks by to go to work is coming tomorrow to end my life or to break into my apartment. And it also includes, you know, some sort of like visions and kind of these types of things. But I had to mention those movies, especially Perfect Blue, which is just an absolutely incredibly twisted, weird movie. It looks a lot more at Fame, I think, but definitely it's an interesting look at anxiety and nerves, I just think, in general, when you're living and when you're being influenced by all these other people, and you start to really lose control a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, I actually have never seen Perfect Blue, and now I'm feeling like I probably have to. But specifically to Black Swan, though, I think a lot of Aronofsky could fit that bill as well. I mean, Requiem, Pi, even Mother, definitely a lot of that same kind of feeling works through a lot of his work.
Yeah, and those films definitely have just built-in dread, you know? So that you feel as though something really bad is going to happen by the end of this film. You know, when you're watching it. And that's how I felt when I was watching She Dies Tomorrow. I didn't know exactly if people were going to die or kind of what was going to happen. But I definitely felt as though something bad is going to happen to these characters that I'm watching on screen. And that's how I felt with Perfect Blue, with Black Swan, with, I guess, like you're saying, a lot of Aronofsky. But yeah, had to just give a little shout out to Perfect Blue.
Nice. Yeah, it sounds like an interesting movie for sure. All right, I'm going to do something here with my next piece that I don't think I've ever actually done before. Maybe I did while back on the podcast, but I'm going to go with something that's not a movie. It is a piece of a song lyric, but I just, I thought of it while I was watching this movie, and I was like, this kind of fits really well, so I'm going to do it. It's my show, I could do it, you know?
Yeah.
It is from The Cure's Plain Song on their Disintegration album, the album opener. It's the line, "It's so cold, like the cold if you're dead, and you smiled for a second," which I thought is like a perfect, it perfectly encapsulates kind of this feeling of these people who are terrified of dying, but at the same time are coming to this acceptance of dying and of what they're, you know, of that, the fact that that is all part of what this whole existence is, and that it's, you know, it's just a natural extension to life, and that it's okay, you know. And some of the characters are more okay with it than others. Some of them are not kind of giving into that realization at all, but some of them are totally on board with this kind of goth idea, you know, of this Cure song.
Can you reread that lyric one more time?
Sure. It's so cold, like the cold when you're dead, and you smiled for a second.
Well, it's interesting. Right? It really works. That's why I think, you know, it's weird when you're just listening to a song and you might hear that and you'll be like, oh, it's just whatever, it's part of the song. But then when you put it in context of something like She Dies Tomorrow or this right. conversation on death and grief and yeah. all those things, you're like, oh my gosh, that is the most profound thing anyone has ever written.
Well, that is Robert Smith, so
yeah, well, he's my that's favorite. Fantastic. I'm so glad I could be a part of history.
There you go, right? I might have to do that again sometime because it was fun. So what do you got for your next piece?
Okay, so is this my last? I don't know how many we go, right? Five basic around.
Yeah,
each.
Five. If you have any like extras you really want to throw in after, we can squeeze them in. But yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna go with something that it's definitely more sci-fi focused, but I think it really holds true to the idea of those around you are changing, and they're changing in a sort of reluctant acceptance, which makes no sense when I say next one is Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Right on.
And I'm going with the 1978 film directed by Philip Kaufman with Donald Sutherland and just incredible Jeff Goldblum performance in there. And that film is, you know, about aliens coming and taking over bodies. But the biggest thing that made me link it to She Dies Tomorrow is when these aliens take over the bodies, what happens to your loved ones and the people around you is they become basically emotionless. You know, so they basically just become not necessarily robots, but they become just resigned to a quiet, very action-based, non-violent, really based existence. Yes, of course, it's much more about the end of the world in a different way, in a different sense, but it really made me think of it, especially with, I think, some of the acting in She Dies Tomorrow when characters become infected, you know, or when they start to feel as though death is coming for them. Then their demeanor changes and their acting changes a bit. And it becomes very, not deadpan, but very emotionless and kind of just, here are the lines, here's what I'm feeling.
Sure.
And it even reminded me, which isn't necessarily like a linked piece, but it reminded me of the acting and such and like Killing of a Sacred Deer. And that kind of just like plain faced, I've accepted what I'm saying and what I'm feeling. And it just reminded me of, I don't know why, Body Snatchers, it reminded me of that, but that's just a much more sci-fi based film, but it's definitely still about the end of the world, and it's about those around you changing in a way where they lose, you know, the essence of themselves, which I think is happening to certain characters in She Dies Tomorrow. You know, when you think that you're going to be dying tomorrow, and you look back at who you are and what you've done, sometimes, as seen in the movie, you are like upset with those things, you know, and you wish that those truths were different. And so you lose a bit of yourself and you lose all those decisions you made, you know, to become the person that is going to be dying in the next day, which is a long winded way of saying that I think that those two movies are related.
Right. No, well, totally. And I think this is kind of a good moment to kind of go on a quick little tangent here. And that's that I've seen a lot of articles that kind of point to this being like a perfect COVID moment movie, you know? And I mean, what do you think of that? Like, do you think that makes sense to look at this movie and just that? I guess it's like a combination of the the lack of connection and the realization that you know things could go bad at any moment, you know, and who knew that things could get this crazy. Like, what do you think about that comparison?
I think it's interesting, and I know this has been talked about by others, but you know, the film wasn't made during COVID times, or for this specific time, and so usually, in my opinion, when that happens, it ends up being much more relevant. You know, I think that this film will end up being more relevant to COVID times, to living through a pandemic, than the COVID movies that come out in 2 to 3 sure. years. I think it's tough to say because I personally am someone who gets not necessarily freaked out about death, but someone who definitely thinks about it. Like, I think I think about sickness and death and those things, you know, on Tuesdays at 1:30 a.m., which is just, you know, not a positive or negative thing. It's just something that I've, you know, grown to do over, you know, over the last, whatever, 6 years as time has gone by and as I've continued to grow older. I think it's a fine comparison to say that it's great for COVID times. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest piece of She Dies Tomorrow that relates in my mind is that idea that you can get sick at any time and not realize it.
Right.
I think that as we see all these people around us, you know, some of us have lost family members, some of us have lost friends, and I would say most people at least know someone that's been infected or someone that's had it been quarantined, and we all kind of feel this sense of loneliness and isolation, which is not really a part of the film that we've talked about tons, but it's definitely something that Amy Simons is, I think, trying to say isolation and loneliness and how these things lead you to really getting inside of your head and being unsure of what's going to happen next. And I think that mixture of isolation and fear of the unknown is part of what's driving all of the anxiety, you know, in all of our heads right now.
It multiplies it a lot. Like when you, the combination of being isolated and anxiety, you know, they multiply together.
Well, and it's like in terms of She Dies Tomorrow, Jane Addams' character, I think her name is just Jane, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. You know, she seemingly lives somewhat alone. She spends a lot of time in a basement looking at, looking under a microscope, you know, and when you're doing that, let's say all day, and you have the idea of dying tomorrow or the idea of, you know, those around you getting very, very sick, it's hard not to let that infect your mind when there's no one to talk about it with. You know, you're just kind of like by yourself, you're allowing these thoughts to infect your mind and you can't move one way or another. And so I think it's pretty incredible that this film comes out right now.
Yeah.
And it's also like terrifying to watch right now. Yeah. Like, no, but I mean, like the horror, I think, works much better because we are at a heightened state of, you know, anxiety around, let's say, sickness and death.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of anxiety and sickness and death, I'm going to go with my last piece, which is Charlie Kaufman's 2008 film, Synecdoche, New York, which is, I think, a masterpiece of those feelings and those ideas. Ugh. But I just think that the idea of just like, this movie isn't really like a hypochondriac kind of thing, but I mean, it basically just this idea of like, I'm sick and I'm going to die and I can't explain it, but there's something wrong. And that whole thing that the Philip Seymour Hoffman character has going on with him in Synecdoche, I think there's a definite parallel there. Somebody given a certain set of circumstances could turn from a character in this movie into that character in that movie, possibly. It's a weird thing to explore for sure. And an interesting link, I think.
That is absolutely, I think, an incredible pick.
Nice.
I saw that movie for the first time a couple months ago. I just had never seen it, kind of missed it. And it hit me like an absolute train. I think especially that's a movie that works in very, very well right now. I think that's such an interesting parallel. It wasn't on my list, and for some reason I didn't really think about it, but it's interesting to think about, yeah, one person who's can feel that they're getting sick. Like he knows that he just doesn't really know what's wrong or
right. He's just
happening.
Sure there's something. There must be, right? It's yeah, like exactly. In his head, there must be something wrong.
Yeah, it's so interesting, and I like it also because I think the last, you know, 15 minutes of Synecdoche have a huge parallel with this movie, where, you know, you get to a certain point that you don't want the rest of everything. You just kind of want to like sit by yourself in a room, and you just want to know what's going to happen to you and what to do.
Right.
You know, when it gets to that point in that film, and the characters in She Dies Tomorrow get to a point where they just want it to happen. You know, sure. they don't want to wait. Yeah, they don't want to wait around. There's like definitely a level of readiness to end things or end at least the waiting.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Ooh. You know, one other thing I hadn't even thought of before I had it on my list, but I'm just thinking about it right now, that's another kind of parallel, is a thing with She Dies Tomorrow that I found interesting is there's like little bits and pieces of those like abstract art things that we get as kind of like transition pieces in the movie. Mm-hmm. They're actually in the scenes sometimes, like as paintings in the rooms and stuff like that. And so it kind of almost in a way is like a parallel to with Synecdoche, New York, with the whole idea of him, you know, creating his whole existence within this play that he's making. And so there's like pieces of his real world blending in and vice versa, and not being able to tell, you know, where one thing stops and the other starts.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I love that about Kaufman, I think, in general.
Sure.
You know, playing between those lines of reality and imagination, or, you know, just is this in someone's head or is this actually happening in real life? And
have you read Ant Kind yet?
I actually just started reading it a couple weeks ago. And so I'm about 100 pages in, 80, 100 pages in.
It's about to go totally off the deep end in the next few hundred pages.
It feels like it's already headed there. So I can't imagine. I've heard very interesting reviews of mm-hmm. it. Were you a fan?
I loved it because I'm on board for anything Charlie Kaufman does, but I can totally see how someone who's either not a fan or maybe like, you know, I like some of his stuff they wouldn't even be able to make it through those first 100 to begin with. And it only gets crazier from there.
Yeah. It feels like a pretty serious undertaking. Especially when you buy the book originally, you just like buy it and you're like, okay, I've seen some of Kaufman's movies. I know he's a pretty weird dude. You know, like he's making things that definitely are one, confusing, two, make you think very mm-hmm. deeply about your own place in the world. And so, all right, let's start this, you know, 600-700 page book and just kind of see what happens. And
sure.
You know, 20 pages in, you're like, okay, this is like, I know this is a Charlie Kaufman book. Like, I need a break. No, yeah, it's definitely a break heavy book.
Oh man, I'm so excited for his new movie. I can't even begin to tell you, but before we get too much further down that tangent, do you have any other that you wanted to squeeze in real quick before we finish this thing up?
Yeah, I gotta squeeze in one movie and one TV show. The film I want to squeeze in is one I just saw, Take Shelter. It's I think much less about death and much more just about like I think general anxiety.
Sure.
About the state of the world and about the people around you, and that's a 2011 film by Jeff Nichols with Michael Shannon and Jessica Chastain. And I was just blown away by that movie. And I think that the way it deals with like hyper anxiety that builds up, you know, inside of you, so much that you are convinced of that something is going to happen.
Sure. Yeah. I love that comparison. I hadn't even thought about that, even though I saw your tweets about the movie and it still didn't like kind of like hit me. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I love that.
Yeah. It's a weird relation. Because I think the movies are fundamentally quite different.
Sure.
You know? But the lead characters, at least what's happening inside of the lead characters, actually might have some similarity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what's the TV show you wanted to bring up?
So the TV show is The OA.
Oh, I love that show.
I love that show. I think it's just such an interesting feat of storytelling. But the main reason why I thought of it is that... you know, Britt Marling, you know, who's the lead and co-creator of that show, she convinces people of something, I think, like very, very outlandish and something that really makes no sense to
sure
the naked eye, which I feel is happening in She Dies Tomorrow. You know, I think it's about a character saying like, this thing is going to happen. you know, or like this thing exists, without much of any backing or without much of any proof,
right?
Or clues that this is going to happen. And then people just being influenced enough to say, okay, I believe you. And now I am involved. And I sure. also feel those exact same things. And so I just wanted to shout it out really quickly.
Yeah, no, I like that. It's like, it's such a big leap for any of the other characters to take, but they jump right on in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that. All right, well, I'm going to do the finished puzzle here and list off all the things we just talked about. And that includes It Follows, The Happening, Final Destination, To Dust, The Leftovers, I Heart Huckabees, Perfect Blue, Black Swan, and we squeeze in a few other Aronofsky in there, Repulsion, The Cure's Plain Song, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Synecdoche, New York, Take Shelter, and The OA. So I think we've got a lot of heavy movies on there. You know, a lot of interesting stuff. Obviously, that dread and that anxiety is something that is going to just obviously filter through any conversation about this movie, any writing about this movie. I mean, that's what it is when it comes down to it. And I think it's a very unique film, and I certainly enjoyed it quite a bit. Did you have any other like kind of closing thoughts on it? Anything we kind of didn't mention about the movie?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you pointed out this has been a brutal conversation about grief and death, which is I've quite enjoyed, which is an odd dichotomy there. I do want to mention that the use of colors, which it really isn't something that we touched on in terms of, you know, puzzle pieces or linked movies, but She Dies Tomorrow is, I think, like a pretty striking film to watch. And I think it has an incredible use of color throughout it mm-hmm. that, you know, you've seen on the poster, you've seen, you know, in quick clips, but... to watch it with the music and once you've, I think, lived with those characters for, you know, even 20, 30 minutes, really puts you into an odd state of mind. And so I had to shout that out. And then there's like a one pool shot. There's a pool shot towards the end of She Dies Tomorrow that, really has stayed with me with, Jane Addams, character Jane. Mm-hmm. That I just thought was absolutely fantastic, and like just that 3 to 4 seconds is something that has unfortunately been swimming in my mind, not to use a horrible pun.
I like that pun. That's good. But yeah, no, I totally know what you're talking about there with that shot. And yeah, I mean, definitely amazing use of color in here. That use of color, along with what I talked about earlier, the use of music, I think just really makes for a really cool visual experience with this movie. Only one other thing I wanted to mention, and just really briefly, is that the main character, when she dies, she wants to be turned into a leather jacket, but we'll just have to save that for our next conversation on this movie, I think.
I can't believe it wasn't brought up. I'm shocked by that.
Yep. Sorry, guys. You're going to have to wait for part two of this conversation for that. But this has been great, Michael. Is there another movie you saw recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Oof. That's tough. Oh, I have to recommend this. It just got put back on Netflix. Safety Not Guaranteed.
I've never seen that. I always wanted to.
Yeah, Mark Duplass, Jake Johnson, Aubrey Plaza. It's been one of my favorite movies for, you know, the last whatever since it came out, decade or so. And I just think it's so fantastic. It's a wonderful, lovable film that includes a little bit of time travel and a little bit of weirdness, and it's great.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's finally time. I've always wanted to see that. It looked great at the time, and I just never got around to it. But awesome. Why don't you tell people where they could find your work?
Yeah, definitely. You can find me on Twitter at PeachFuzzCritic, hence why I currently have the mustache for an audio experience. And I'll have a couple reviews coming out on the film stage coming up, and then I'm doing some Fantasia Fest coverage as well for a few different outlets. So I should be coming out with quite a few articles over the next couple weeks.
Beautiful. Well, hey, thank you so much for doing this. And I'd love to have you back sometime if you're ever interested in doing the whole puzzle piece thing again.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to come back for a happier, more enjoyable film.
That sounds like a good plan. One that's not completely ruining our sleepless nights for the weeks leading up to
it. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, guys. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Stephanie.
And we're the hosts of
Dead Time Stories.
Dead Time Stories,
with a Z,
is a weekly podcast where we tell you stories of ghosts, hauntings, mysteries, conspiracies,
the supernatural, paranormal,
the generally eerie, spooky,
and all around weird.
If you like scary stories, witty banter, and classy broads,
we're your ghouls.
Gals.
Some of our stories include Eastern State Penitentiary.
No.
And where is it? Does it
sum up 12?
No!
The Gettysburg Dime Museum.
They were like, show starts at 5, Mr. President. He was like, thank you, 5. No, Stephanie. He was like, thank you, 5.
Fort Mifflin.
So the Americans burned down their own fort. They were like, oh, you want this?
You want this?
Welcome to Philly.
And more.
New episodes are posted Thursdays at midnight on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher.
Listen and subscribe, rate and review today.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about She Dies Tomorrow. Thank you to Michael Frank for joining me on the show. It was a great conversation. And if you enjoyed this episode of Piecing It Together, make sure you are subscribed on your podcast app of choice. We're, of course, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Pocket Cast, all the big podcast apps. And if you listen to podcasts somewhere and we're not there, let me know. I'll make sure to get there. And you can, of course, also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. You can follow us on social media at Piecing Pod, join our Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, and check out our Patreon. Our Patreon is under my name, produced by David Rosen, because it includes content from my music career as David Rosen, and then also from all the podcasts I work on, including Piecing It Together, All Rice, No Beans, Awesome Movie Year, and we don't have any Bird Road content on there, but maybe we should one of these days. But anyway, check out the Patreon. Lots of great stuff on there. And coming up this month in September, we're going to have a lot of music-related stuff because I've got a new album coming out in October. So I am very much looking forward to sharing some new stuff with you guys. But for now, let's dig back into the dread of this She Dies Tomorrow movie with one of my darkest tracks, a piece that I put out as a single for Halloween last year. It is called Stalker, and I'm sure I probably played it right around the time I put it out, but that would have been the last time, so it's good to dig back to this track and play something that's nice and dark with a lot of impending doom within the feeling of the track. So again, this is called Stalker. It's available as a single on iTunes, on Spotify, on all those places. Enjoy it, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.